أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لئن شكرتم لأزيدنكم ولئن كفرتم إن عذابي لشديد صدق الله العظيم. This morning at about just before the Zuhr Salat, about an hour before the Zuhr Salat, I was talking to those people who are in the Etikaf. It was not really anything planned, but just some thoughts came in my mind which I wish to discuss with them. So we had a majlis just before the Zuhr Salat. But while after the Salat, or just after the Bayan, one young university friend of mine, whom Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala has given that kind of muhabbat that he does not miss any of my programs, and he even travels up and down if there is any program in some other town. So with such regret he said, "Molna, I missed your majlis," because it was not announced, so he was not here. But just listening to his the regret that I missed it, it came into my mind and heart that since whatever we do should be for the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, so even if it means for the one person that we have to repeat whatever was said, as long as it is for the pleasure of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, then it will be rewarded. So others who are here, what I am really going to do is give again a gist of what I discussed a little earlier on. So you could consider it to be a revision, because these are not bayans. This is not a bayan. It is just for the purpose of our islah that these things are mentioned. Hazrat Sayyid Ismail Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh, he gave a bayan. Thousands of people were in the Jummah Masjid of Delhi, and when he was walking out, one old person came running and he says that, "I am coming from a certain village and I came to listen to your bayan, and it is over." So he had delivered a 3-hour bayan. So he made that one person sit and he gave him another 3-hour bayan, exactly what he said. And he said that those thousands of people that I addressed was for that one Allah, and this one person that I'm addressing is also for that same one Allah. So if our niyats are correct, then we get rewards. If our niyat is not correct, we get no rewards. But some of the things that were mentioned could be beneficial for everybody else too. So I'm just giving you the gist of what was discussed. I read out from one kitab of one waz of Hazrat Maulana Hakimullah Akhtar Sahib Damat Barakatuhum, one sentence in which he said that jis ke dil ke andar khuda ki muhabbat nahi, wo dil takabbur se bara hua hota hai. That heart in which there is no love of Allah Ta'ala, then that heart will be filled with pride. After having read that, then the discussion went on to what is pride then. So this is a common problem. Many young people, old people, many people who are wanting the Islah, they say that we've got pride. So what is pride? If a person wears good clothes, is it pride? If he travels in a good car, is it pride? If he stays in a good home, is it pride? If he has plenty of gold and silver, is it pride? That is not pride. So always we ask, what are the symptoms? When the person says, "I've got pride," then we say, what are the symptoms? Because sometimes the symptoms, it seems that the person got pride, but it's not pride. It's like the fly that is sitting on the mirror. To us it seems that it is inside the mirror, but the fly is outside the mirror. The pride, when does it come? When does this pride, vanity, ujub come into the heart? It comes when a person considers whatever his achievements are to be of his own hard work and effort. That's when pride comes. that he considers everything to be of his own intelligence, his hard work, his effort, then that is when pride comes. I gave the example that we have an attorney that is sitting in Ehtikaf, we have a dentist in Ehtikaf, we have a Maulana Sahib in Ehtikaf, we have a Qari Sahib in Ehtikaf, and we have people of other professions in this Ehtikaf. Now they are sitting here. Now if the one who is an expert in law, if he has to say that my knowledge of law is more than everyone else that is sitting here in Ehtikaf, so will we say that it is pride? Or if the Qari Sahib has to say that my knowledge of Tajweed and Qira'at is more than everyone else that is here in Ehtikaf or in this masjid, then would we say that that is pride? Or if the dentist says that he knows more about the teeth of a person and more about pyria and more about gum diseases and more about extraction of teeth than everyone else that is here, then would we call that pride? That is an expression of a fact, that the person has got more knowledge than those others that are here in this masjid. In that particular field he has got more knowledge. So having more knowledge, or considering oneself to having more knowledge than someone else, is not pride. It is not something that is punishable by Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala if the person considers to have more knowledge than others. What is objectionable is that if this person thinks that because of this extra knowledge that I have, therefore I am afzal, I am superior than others. In the sight of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, I am great. And that definitely Jannat is for me because I have more knowledge in this particular field. Then now that is pride. That is dangerous. Because the person does not know what is going to be his condition in the hereafter. He does not know in what state his death will come. He does not know whether he is held in esteem in the eye of Allah Ta'ala, or in spite of his knowledge, because of his evils, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is not going to forgive him. He is going to first punish him in the fire of hell and then give him freedom. Now all that he doesn't know. So just having more knowledge does not make a person esteemed in the eye of Allah Ta'ala. That is the bottom line. That the person must now consider whatever achievement he has, whatever degrees and qualifications he has, all those things he must consider as a gift of Allah Ta'ala. When he considers it as a gift of Allah Ta'ala, then pride cannot come into the heart. Because he's considering it as a gift of Allah Ta'ala. And again, the person must fear that it can be snatched away any time. The person must have this constant fear that it can be snatched away, because it is a gift, it is an amanat, it's a trust. Allah Ta'ala can take it away whenever he wills. And that nobody has got full control and authority over everything that he possesses. I gave a few examples that take all those people who are insuring their voices. There are so many singers that are insuring their voices. Now, why are they insuring their voices? They are insuring their voices because they do not own and possess. They are not masters of those voices. It is a gift of Allah Ta'ala which they do not want to acknowledge because of the disbelief in Allah. But the fact is that it is a clear sign and indication that they are not owning those voices. It's a gift of Allah. If Allah takes away that voice, then all those who were queuing up and buying tickets to listen to those singers, they all will disappear. And nobody holds up a person because of his voice. We know of a lot of hijacks because of cash and because of the car itself or for other reasons. But we haven't heard that a person was held up and he says it's a hold up. Why? He says because I'm going to steal your voice. We haven't heard of anybody stealing a voice. So then why are they insuring those voices? Because they truly believe that this voice is not theirs. That it can be snatched away. It can be taken away. It can be lost. For various reasons it can go. So in the same way, the person who has got wealth, he considers this wealth to be a gift of Allah Ta'ala. The person who has got some degrees and qualifications, he considers it to be a gift of Allah Ta'ala. that example which I have given many times, if we only keep that before us, then there is no question of pride coming. And that is that whoever has any kind of wealth or property, then he thinks of how it came to him. So either it has come because of his hard work and hard effort. Day and night he worked. He did not give any concern to his health, nothing. Day and night business was running. And he traveled up and down, here, there, everywhere, and he accumulated the wealth. So now he says that I am the one who worked very hard and I accumulated it. But if this person is a sensible person and he's got muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala in his heart and he's got marifat of Allah Ta'ala, then he must trace, he must go back from the time of his birth, he must see who is it that took him through all the different stages of life. The stage where he was in his napkins, where he could not even clean himself. We haven't heard, as I said, of any baby that the moment it was born, after that it took the jug and went to the toilet to make istinja. We haven't heard of any baby as yet that went and made istinja itself. And if anybody had to ask that accountant, that person who is a government accountant, he has reached that stage now that the whole country is accounting he is doing. But when that child was born, if that father had to ask that baby that was born, that 1 plus 1, what does it equal to? Then I say that even that mother will say, looks like my husband is gone crack. He's asking the baby 1 plus 1. Where can the baby give an answer to 1 plus 1? So she too will say, you rather divorce me, because I think now you are an asylum case, because you want the baby to give you answers to mathematical problems. So that great accountant also, there was a time when he couldn't even add 1 plus 1. So who is it that gave him that intelligence? Who is it that gave him that strength, that ability to go to the mother, to the school, to start learning from 1 plus 1, and then go on and on until he went to the university level and qualified, and now he is in that very high government position? So if he traces his whole life history, then he will come to the conclusion that it was nothing but the gift of Allah Ta'ala. So now he makes shukr over it and make use of the ni'mat, then Allah Ta'ala will increase it, because he believes that it is a gift of Allah Ta'ala, so he must make shukr over it. So that is not pride now if he says that I have got great knowledge of accountancy. But if he says that no, it's nobody was really instrumental, it was my hard work, it was my effort, I did this, I did that, and that is how I achieved it. So if that is the case, then this person must also be in full control of that knowledge that he now has. There must be no fear of loss, because he say he worked hard and he accumulated and now he's got it. So if he's got it in his brain, so now he must be fully in charge. There must be no fear of any loss, whereas we know that there is great fear of loss. There is great fear of loss. I gave the example of that one person who was a professional person, very intelligent, but he had a stroke. So it hit the brains, or whatever damage must have been done. The person forgot his name also. For many, many days there was a loss of memory. The person wouldn't even be able to tell you his name. After some time again, Allah Ta'ala gave him back his memory. But he went through this stage where he forgot even his name. So where can we say proudly that no, I am the owner and nothing can be snatched away? So if he goes and traces this whole history of his, then outwardly he worked, but who is the one that gave him the intelligence, the strength and the ability? It is Allah Ta'ala. So it came from Allah. Or he got it as inheritance. So this inheritance, how did he get it? Who caused him to be born in that family? Why did he become the son of a certain king? Or why did she become the daughter of a certain king or ruler? Or some great oil well sheikh, that the person is owning billions, and this child was born in that family. Now the father died or the mother died and the person inherited a fortune. So we had no choice. None of us were first consulted. Allah Ta'ala didn't have a mashwara that in which family you wish to be born, which color you wish to be born, and what kind of voice and eyes and ears and all you wish to have, and which country you wish to be born. Nothing. Lai hayat to aaye qada le chali chale, na apni khushi aaye the hum na apni khushi chale. So on the one hand, this person is receiving a massive inheritance. I gave that example once of that one doctor who passed away in an accident. His estate was worth about 2 point some million. So I had to work out the estate for that family. Now there, that wife, she was expecting his child. She was 9 months pregnant at that time. A son was born, and that son inherited 1 point some million. Now that child was in the mother's stomach and was already a millionaire. Now here was a case of just a millionaire, but there are many cases like that where the person can be a billionaire and still the child is in the napkins. So that is the gift of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, that he was born in that family. And on the other hand, that poor woman living in a shack, she doesn't even have sufficient food to eat, she doesn't have proper shelter, she doesn't have clothing. Now if she dies, then that child, what inheritance is going to get? Or if it's a gift, then again, why is it that that person thought of so and so to go and give him that gift? And who is the one that gave him all that in the first place? So if we take these things into consideration, then that pride won't come, that ujub won't come. The Qari Sahib, who is reading with a very beautiful voice, from where did that voice come? So now if that Qari Sahib is reading and making shukr of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, then Allah ta'ala will increase that ni'mat. But if the person thinks that no, it is mine, so then you must be in full control of it, whereas it can be snatched away anytime. So this was what the discussion centered on, that we must not consider anything which we have in our possession as ours. For worldly purposes we say it's ours. We can buy, we can sell, we can transfer, we can give as gift and we can give as donation. So for worldly reasons Allah Ta'ala has given us some sort of ownership, but in reality it all belongs to Allah Ta'ala. So our life must be between hope and fear. There must be khawf on one side and raja on one side. Al-imanu bayna al-khawf wal-raja. That on the one hand you have very high hopes in Allah Ta'ala's rahmat, in His mercy, in His forgiveness, in His kindness. That Allah Ta'ala is definitely very, very compassionate, forgiving, and He wants to see us succeed in this world, in the qabr, in the akhirat. Allah Ta'ala does not want to punish, He does not like to punish. On the one hand, we have great hope in Allah Ta'ala's maghfirat and forgiveness. And on the other hand, we have this fear also, that if we are going to be disobedient, if we are going to reject Allah Ta'ala's ni'mats, and if we are going to reject His authority and His greatness and grandeur, then Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala has also got the power to seize and snatch away. So many countries of the world, we have seen what happens within seconds. Within seconds. So many cities disappeared from the surface of the earth. They sank into the ground. And archaeologists excavating, they give us information so many thousand years ago, it looks like one whole city went deep down into the ground. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, that's what He wants, that we must recognize Him, have His marifat. So we must not just rush to conclusion that every little thought that comes into the heart of happiness over some achievement is pride. But if we consider ourselves superior to the other person, we look down upon those who do not have that kind of qualification or that kind of wealth or that kind of ni'mats, then that is pride, which is a very dangerous sickness. Shaitan suffered from pride, therefore he refused, out of arrogance, he refused to make sajda to Adam alayhi salatu wasalam. So the rejection of haq and truth, that is pride. Rejection of that which is haq, and considering others as inferior to us. Then also, because they are in itikaf, so I was discussing with them that in our ibadat that we make, we should not go on to any extreme. We read about the incident of Hazrat Shaykh Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi and all the other great, great Buzrugs and Akabir, Hazrat Imam Shafi Rahmatullah Alayhi, Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Alayhi, Hazrat Usman Ghanira radiallahu ta'ala an, and so many of them who used to read Quran Sharif the whole night, sometime in one rakat the whole Quran Sharif. So now when we read all those things, all in the month of Ramadan, one Quran Sharif during the day, one at night, 24 hours recitation. So when we read those incidents, then the desire comes into our hearts that we should also follow suit. So it's a very good desire. But we must look at our capacity and do whatever we have to do. We must not go on to extremes just because some people in the ummah, Allah Ta'ala gave them that strength, gave them that quwwat, gave them that kind of energy to do that. Now we do not look at them and do the same thing. Then what will happen is we will do it for one day and that will be the end of it. We must keep that fire burning, that desire there to go on with that ibadat. For example, if it is Quran Sharif, then recite that much, that after that much of recitation, now you look forward, you close your Quran Sharif, you keep it with respect, and now you look forward to when can I commence again and continue with this tilawat. If it is tasbihat, then you make that much tasbih, then now you look forward to when can I read again the next tasbih. If it is nafil salat, then you make that much nafil salat, that now you look forward to again making the nafil salat. It must not be that now you get so tired that you feel that you got some burden off your shoulders, that finish, now I did enough and that's the end of it. And that beautiful example of Hazrat Maulana Yaqub Rahmatullah Alayh, that they take lessons from everything. To us, all these things look like just simple little things. So, but the examples are so beautiful. He gives the example of a yo-yo. And I was telling my friends here that this yo-yo, if you go to Makkah Sharif, those yo-yos which light up, you'll find that person all the time playing with it on the streets of Makkah Sharif and Madina Sharif. And when it comes into fashion here and when it becomes a craze, then at that time the nani ma, dadi ma, the nanas and dada, nanas and nanis, the old and the young, everybody seems to be playing with that yo-yo. Now to us it's a toy. It's just a toy. But the example is beautiful. He says that when you are playing with that yo-yo, what do you do? You don't allow that string to open up completely. Before it opens out completely, you pull it up again. Because if you just leave it like that and it goes away down and it's open completely, so now it's not going to come up. You will have to take it and start winding again. Make it, some effort will be required to bring it up again, and then you can start playing again. So he uses that as an example, that in our ibadat, I'm talking about nafil ibadat, then let that fire be still burning there, let that desire be still there. Before the string opens up completely, leave it there. And afterwards you can bring it up again. But if you're going to just exert yourself and exhaust yourself, then you will lose the interest. So even in i'tikaf, you should not do any ibadat to that extent that the person does not look forward to continuing with that. When you are tired, go and relax, sleep. Diversify the ibadat. If you are making nafil namaz, now you made sufficient, then start reading Quran Sharif. You read Quran Sharif, you start making zikr. But in this way, what will happen is that the desire will remain, that you want to continue. You don't want to just wrap up and give it up. Now that is very important. It is very important that we keep that fire burning. Don't let it extinguish altogether. So that is something that is for those not only in i'tikaf, but for everybody at all times. That whenever it comes to nafil ibadat, then do not go on to extremes. Many people we have seen that they will go on to extremes one or two days, and after that the rest of their lives they finish, they're tired, they don't want to do any more ibadat. Or they will go back to their old lifestyles. When they make a change in their lives, then suddenly they will go to such an extreme that for a few days a person will think that this person is a Bayazid Bustami or Junaid Baghdadi. And after 2-3 days or 2 months or 3 months, the person gets tired because he has gone on to extreme. And after that he becomes, instead of Bayazid, he becomes Nange Yazid. Even Yazid feels ashamed of him. They go back to the old lifestyles. But if the person was doing it gradually, tadrijan, then that person is not going to give it up like a hot potato, drop it off. So let there be a balance, let there be moderation. We should not look at those people who made ibadah 24 hours and think that we can also follow them and emulate them. We don't have that capacity. In our times, put all the effort into staying away from haram, and then make a little bit of zikr, tilawat and ibadat, and see how Allah Ta'ala takes the person on high levels. Because there are fitnas all around. There are so many different kinds of fitnas. So at such a time, Allah Ta'ala makes life easy. To get to Him, Allah Ta'ala makes it easy. Allah does not make it difficult. So this is for everyone. It's not only for the people in i'tikaf. But especially when in i'tikaf, because we say 24 hours you must spend your time correctly, then some people just read these incidents in the kitabs, and now they say, well, are we going to read 3 Quran shays for the day and night. And then what happens after a day or two, then finish, they lose that interest. Whereas it is very important that you should keep looking forward to it. Your ibadat must become enjoyable. It must never be a burden. That example I keep on repeating, that the Comrades Marathon, what happens there? The person knows that after that 84 kilometers or 87 he's going to run, then he could land himself in hospital. He will have an aching back and aching feet, and sometimes he's out of job after that for days. There's pain, but because he's looking forward to the medals that he will be getting, and the television crew that will be filming him, and the publicity that he will get, so all that pain, in that pain he finds happiness. He gets happiness in that pain. Outwardly there's pain, but he's experiencing great happiness. So in the same way, outwardly in this ibadat, it seems that there's a little bit of pain, that the person is now standing up for tahajjud when others are sleeping. The person is reading Quran Sharif when others are listening to BBC and CNN and all other radio stations. The person is making nafil ibadat, he's doing tilawat, he's doing zikr in the masjid. Now at that time, outwardly it seems there's a bit of pain. But if the person looks at what he is going to get in return, what are the rewards, and especially the reward being the raza and the pleasure of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, then it eases all that pain. So there must be that looking forward to what Allah Ta'ala is going to give in return. Then there will be an enjoyment. The person will not feel like bored. He's not going to feel as if he has made a big mistake, that way he went and sat down in the masjid, he should have also remained outside. There will be no such thing. He will look forward to it. He will enjoy that ibadat. And there is definitely an enjoyment in zikr, in tilawat, in ibadat. There's a definite enjoyment, because Allah Ta'ala is the one who is observing, who is watching, and He has made those promises. But there must be that sincerity, and Allah Ta'ala will give that happiness in the heart. A few other things we had discussed, but I said in half an hour's time we are going to finish. So even this much is sufficient, that what we should do is consider all the ni'mats as the gifts of Allah Ta'ala. To express happiness over the ni'mats, or to say I have a little more than the other, or I have more knowledge than the other, that is not objectionable. But to consider it as being of our own hard work and effort, and Allah Ta'ala had nothing to do in this whole qualification of ours, or in this wealth of ours, na'uzu billah, then that is kufr. We must recognize the Creator, recognize the giver of the ni'mats. And also that fear must be there, that Allah Ta'ala can snatch it away, He can take it away. Whenever He wills, He can take it away. There are so many examples of that, and we know throughout the world there's plenty of evidence of that, how Allah Ta'ala gives it to and He can take it away too. And those examples that I gave of those singers and others is to prove that they too, deep down in their hearts, they know that it is not ours. We have got no control over it. That's why they are ensuring that it can get lost any time, so that we can get some money at least for the voice that's gone. So if we take these 2-3 points into consideration, that we must take lessons from everything that is around us. In everything Allah Ta'ala has got lessons for us. Then our life will become pleasant, a happy one. Outward conditions will not affect the tranquility of our hearts, and Allah Ta'ala will give us those rewards which He gives to the awliya siddiqeen. With our little effort in these days, He gives us those rewards. So put the effort into staying away from haram, which is the major problem in our society today, that we are prepared to make some zikr, tilawat, ibadat, but restraining ourselves from haram seems to be a our biggest problem, that we are not prepared to take that pain on our hearts. May Allah Ta'ala give me, give you, and the entire ummah the tawfiq of making amal. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. So these were a few things that I said it because of the keen desire of one of our young brothers who missed the program earlier on. But of course we couldn't go into all the details, but that much is sufficient. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammadin wa barik wa sallim. Allahumma rabbana zalamna anfusana wa illam taghfir lana wa tarhamna lanakunanna minal khasirin. Allahumma inna nas'aluka min khayri ma sa'alaka minhu nabiyyuka Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam wa na'udhu bika min sharri ma sta'aza minhu nabiyyuka wa habibuka Sayyidina Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Wa antal musta'an wa alaykal balagh wa la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Wa sallallahu ta'ala ala khayri khalqihi wa nuri arshihi sayyidina wa nabiyyina wa shafi'ina wa maulana Muhammadin wa alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in bi rahmatika ya arham.